I'm Tass Mellis of The Starters.
This is Ben Golver with the Open Floor Podcast.
Hi, I'm Kristen Ludlow from NBA Inside Stuff.
I'm OG Anunoby of the Toronto Raptors.
Hey, I'm Elena Deladon, and welcome to the Double Clutch.
Double Clutch.
Double Clutch.
Double Clutch.
Double Clutch Podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, basketball fans of all ages, welcome to the Double Clutch Podcast with me, Hugh Hopkins. This week, we have a sit down with the director and producer of a new fantastic documentary called One Man and His Shoes. Yemi Bamiro is a lot like all of us and fell in love with basketball after watching Michael Jordan in the 1990s. But upon taking a closer look at him and his career, he found that while MJ helped grow the game of basketball and black culture in general, it also unveiled a dark side to everybody's favorite shoes. So let's get straight into it.
Well, thanks for taking the time to talk, Yemi. It's much appreciated. I appreciate these press junkets. You are just doing back to back, so
that's okay. Hopefully,
I'll make this fun for you. As much as possible.
No problem.
For those who don't know you, then who don't know your background. First of all, I'll tell you a little bit about where this will be going out. We run a basketball website called Double Clutch, which is sort of a UK NBA, WNBA website. We are sort of expanding into BBL and things like that as well. Yeah. We don't always do stuff about sneaker culture, but sometimes things come along that really tickle our readers' and listeners' interests. So... Yes, especially when it comes to Jumpman, and we saw such a spike on the website during like The Last Dance and things like that. But
yeah,
this is, of course, a bit of almost like an antithesis of The Last Dance in some ways. That was such a celebration, and this is taking on a bit of a different path. So but before we go too much into the film, what's your relationship with Jumpman, and when did that start, and how did you get to learn about the Jordan brand and things like that?
I remember sort of, being a teenager in South London and in the 90s and sort of remembering how big a deal the Chicago Bulls was and that franchise as was, and the fact that Michael Jordan was basically, the king of that. He was like a basketball god who oversaw that franchise. And that's where my following sort of started. The Bulls were, that was an association with excellence, with just brilliance, that a team could sort of like win that many championships and play in the way that they played and sort of like have all of these incredible players with their own sort of like personalities, with Michael Jordan at the helm of that. So yeah, that's where it all started. I was always hyper aware of, what that was and what that meant. And I guess also 90s NBA is just probably like my favorite, iteration of the NBA in terms of like, if you're looking at it from a decade perspective. I think just, the players, the fact that it was when, it made its mass market breakthrough in terms of like globalization and reaching all corners of the world. So I'm a sort of like a sucker for sort of anything 90s, and the NBA in the 90s, and particularly the Bulls and Jordan has always been a sweet spot for me, because I just remember that time and I remember what it was like. I wouldn't say I'm a huge basketball fan, but it was just, I think it was just the Bulls. I followed the NBA, but, I followed the Bulls and I followed sort of, their journey and their winning streak. So that's where it all sort of started.
So when how old are you, if you don't mind me asking?
I'm 37.
Okay. So you're sort of a similar age to the people that run Double Clutch primarily. And I'm a little bit younger, but I remember those days where Jordan and the Bulls took over the NBA, and Michael Jordan took over the world, especially in the Barcelona Olympics. It felt like he was everywhere. So when was it that you started working towards becoming a filmmaker then? You know, how and why did you, what sort of drew you to looking at Jordan Brand and basketball particularly?
So I've worked in TV. That's sort of like where this all sort of started. I've worked in TV since I was about 21. And I started thinking about this story in 2012 because I'd always had ambitions to sort of tell feature-length stories and to tell stories that, you know, perhaps that people could watch in the cinema that were, you know, good enough for a theatrical run or, you know, deemed good enough to be classed as cinematic. So I started thinking about, you know, how I might do that at the back end of 2012. And then I started thinking about subjects that I might, you know, want to, you know, tell, you know, make a film about. And I gravitated towards Jordan and sort of like this story because of the fact that I'd never seen it before. You know, so first and foremost, on a surface level, I had an interest in it and I knew about it, but I'd never seen anything that, you know, had told like the Brand Jordan story from a origin perspective. I liked the idea of thinking about, you know, these guys as architects of sneaker culture in a weird way. So, you know, the sort of the shoe designers and whether that be Peter Moore or sort of like Sonny Vaccaro, David Falk, these guys who were like maybe in their 30s or 40s in the 70s who are now, you know, a little bit older now. I like thinking about them as sort of being, you know, the people that started this so-called sneaker culture. So yeah, I started thinking about how I could tell this story with the men and women that were responsible for this phenomenon. And yeah, this is an independent endeavor. So it was always going to be, you know, it was always going to be sort of like an uphill sort of like struggle to get it made. But I was aware that no one was ever going to come along and give us a pot of money and say like, here's a pot of money, go and make your film. Yeah. So I knew that we would have to sort of do it ourselves, but we were at peace with that. And we just went about making the film knowing that, you know, we wanted to tell the story in this way and knowing that we were from TV and we could sort of like, we had that get up and go to sort of not necessarily wait around for funding and just kind of like do it ourselves as a sort of like side project, labor of love, like passion project sort of thing.
Cool. So, I mean, I watched the film. It's fantastic, brilliantly produced film. So congratulations. It's, I really enjoyed it. And the beginning of it is, as you said, it's a celebration of all these people, of all these sneaker culture people. Like you said, Sonny, you've interviewed Sonny Vaccaro, but you also looked at it through a sort of social lens as well. You know, you had Jemele Hill, a fantastic spokesperson on so many subjects, but and Russ Bankston, of course, you know, a god in the sneaker culture landscape. So how was it tracking down all these people then? And why did you specifically opt to begin the film in this celebratory way?
I wanted to tell the story of the Air Jordan sneaker and I wanted to tell it by the most reliable storytellers and sort of contributors that we could find. And so that would obviously be people that were either in the rooms when these deals were going down or people that had pretty much lived this their whole career. So you refer to Russ Bankston, you know, he's probably like one of the most authoritative voices on sneaker culture in America. So it was important that he was in the film. Jemele Hill, I remember when she was a news correspondent journalist at ESPN, incredible sort of like personality and journalist and not shy to sort of like speak about issues that, you know, mean something. So she was important. Peter Moore, the original sort of like designer of the Air Jordan 1. I think people kind of forget that, you know, he started this, you know, he designed the Air Jordan 1 and the Air Jordan 2. I, you know, history has a weird way of almost like forgetting stuff. this newfound phenomenon of sneaker culture likes to think that Tinker Hatfield is like, you know, the be all and end all of this whole phenomenon. And Peter Moore gave Tinker Hatfield his job. So I was interested in sort of like tracking down these people that perhaps weren't associated with this brand anymore and getting them on record to tell me some of these stories and to tell me how this all happened. Because, yeah, I felt a little bit like our responsibility was like, archivists, you know, like let's talk to these people who are a little bit older now, some of them, if you're talking about Sonny and Peter Moore and David Falk, who, you know, at peace with their legacy, at peace with their contribution, and are just happy to sort of like talk to a random guy from South London about, you know, their part in all of this. So tracking them down was pretty simple, to be fair. It just took a long time, you know. It sort of started with, I want to say, like Roland Lazenby, who is Michael Jordan's biographer. He wrote an incredible biography on Michael Jordan called The Life. And he obviously spoke to everybody when he embarked on that project. And he was one of the first people that I spoke to. He's an amazing man. He was really generous with his time. He believed in the project. And he helped just connect the dots for me. You know, he helped me get in touch with Sonny. Sonny then took probably 2 years to get involved. Sonny's a legend. He's not just going to, you know, you're not just going to pick up the phone or sort of send him an email and he's going to agree to be in your documentary. You know, he is part of the fabric of sneaker culture and college basketball. So, yeah, I guess it was about nurturing relationships and like just allowing people, you know, the time to think about this. And not everyone that you ask is always going to say yes to be in your documentary. And we had the luxury of time. And yeah, I think that allowed us to get some of the people that we got on board, but we were definitely lucky, you know, with some of them. And, you know, but you kind of make your own luck. And I think, yeah, we deserve it, I think, because we were really persistent and we just really, you know, we always wanted these people to serve this story. We didn't want to make a fanboy story, a fanboy film that was sort of like a bit anoraki, a little bit kind of like, oh, like Jordans, aren't they great? We wanted to be, you know, authentic, and we wanted the best storytellers, and we wanted people that would serve the story. We wanted everybody in the film to sort of like have a place. And I think we kind of did that.
Yeah. And I think one person you sort of, that we haven't really touched on just yet is Rick Tallender, who wrote this, you know, that was sort of, really a turning point in the story. It bridged the gap between it being this celebration of sneaker culture and getting all this insight into the social importance of people wearing these, you know, fantastic clothes and fantastic sneakers. And then Rick Tallender's entry point, where it highlighted that someone had been killed over a pair of Jordans. And from that point, you realized where this film was going. Did you set out when you first planned to do this documentary, you set out to highlight the sort of dark side of not just Jordan Brand, but I guess capitalism at large, really? It, you know, you told it through the lens of Jumpman and Jordan, this is an issue that I think, you know, is all across capitalism in so many brands and different ways.
Yeah, no, correct. You're completely right. I think the short answer is yes. I didn't know how you could tell a story about the Air Jordan sneaker and the legacy of this sneaker and not talk about the fact that people for, you know, the best part of 35 years have been getting murdered, or that there was a violence that surrounded this sneaker. I didn't feel that it would be correct to kind of like make this film and not explore that, because it felt like a responsibility to myself, to Will, to Michael, the two producers and the editor, to make a definitive, coherent, comprehensive film that encapsulated, you know, the actual legacy of the Air Jordan sneaker, the warts and all. You know, I think it was really important to explore that. So I knew from the beginning, because when I was a teenager in South London, you know, following the Bulls and following Jordan, I remembered hearing stories about, you know, kids on the subway in New York City getting robbed for their Air Jordans. You know, I remember that quite vividly. I didn't know how we could tell this story without, you know, exploring that element of the shoe's legacy.
I think one of the main people you centered around was Joshua Woods, who you know, he bought several pairs of Jordans. It sounded like he was only a few feet away from his house, you know, or he was on his street, but he'd been followed home from the store and killed for all these Jordans. One of the things that struck me was when you were interviewing his sister, and I think it struck you as well because you asked her to repeat the answer, but Michael Jordan, after learning of Joshua Woods' death, sent the sister a pair of shoes, and she said it felt like receiving a pair of sweets to stop you crying as a child. That's pretty heartbreaking. Now it must have been difficult to sort of get some of these people to trust you with their stories.
I think when it comes to the Woods family, I met them in 2014, and that was not long after, you know, Joshua had been murdered. And yeah, it took about a year, 6 months to a year to sort of, you know, phone conversations and emails and just, yeah, I'm perhaps 6 months to even get someone to call me back, to get Daisy to call me back. And then once we had a correspondence, it was, yeah, she was, incredibly courageous and open with, you know, what she was willing to share. And I don't think it was necessarily difficult. I just wanted to communicate and let her know that, you know, there was no hidden agenda here. I was just interested in her son and his story. And I think at the time, Daisy was basically running an online campaign, sort of like a charity called Life Over Fashion, where she was trying to bring awareness of the fact that this had happened to her son, and she didn't want anyone else. She didn't want anyone else to die in the same way that her son died over senseless, you know, violence over sneakers. So yeah, I don't think it was hard. It was just kind of perhaps like nurturing a relationship and just knowing, just getting someone to know that they could trust me and this process and in telling this story. Because I think ultimately she kind of like revealed to me that she was quite surprised that, you know, the story had traveled so far, you know, like, you know, I found out about the story because I think it might have been in The Guardian. It was in a kind of like a British newspaper. That's how I found out about the story. And then I kind of just went around getting in touch with her. So I think initially she was just a little bit overwhelmed by the fact that, you know, people over here, you know, were aware of what happened with her son. And I think because she was kind of running her charity at the time and wanted to raise awareness, she was happy to sort of like share, you know, her memories and her experience of this really tragic and unfortunate situation that had happened to her.
So after telling her story and several other people's stories during this process, you know, you said that you're a longtime fan of, you know, not so much basketball, but of the Chicago Bulls, of Jordan. What do you feel about him and about the brand today? Because, you know, I still wear Jordans and I'm wearing a Jordan hat and I'm wearing, you know, I wear Jumpman clothing regularly. But making, you know, seeing this, it did sort of strike a chord because I am a big Jordan fan. How did you feel going through this process?
I don't think I necessarily changed that much because I think the objective of any business is to make money. And I think your moral compass is going to get thrown out of shape when things like this happen. I think, you know, their job is to sort of like sell shoes to sort of people that are wanting to buy them, mainly like young people, and market these shoes to people. I just don't see how we can look at it any differently. You know, I think this is their objective, to sell shoes, and, you know, perhaps they don't speak on this issue because they don't think it's that much of an issue, you know, but it is an issue. And I think it's senseless violence that has surrounded this shoe for so many years. So in relation to what I feel about the brand is like, my opinion has necessarily changed of them, but it's, you know, the same perhaps sense of distrust and sense of cynicism that I have with every brand that tries to sell you stuff. But I think when, you know, making money is at the heart of their objective, then of course, like, you know, you're going to question their kind of like ethics and their more, you know, their kind of like character when it comes to issues, you know, like this. So yeah, I it didn't change my thought process. It's kind of like, it just exposes, you know, our love affair with consumerism. And I think when you start talking about that, you start talking about the evils of capitalism, and that's a whole different documentary. So.
I think, I think that it's only been driven into overdrive in recent years, isn't it? With the launch of like the sneakers app and the amount of people that just get so angry at, you know, on Twitter, and you just see what this culture can do to people on the dark side. And this film is a fascinating look at that side of it. So thank you for making it. And
oh, no worries.
Thanks
so
for
much.
Talking to me.
No worries.
And I wanted to ask you one last question before I go.
Of course.
Also had David Stern in the film.
Yeah.
Who has, of course, passed away now. And was it like? What was it like speaking to him?
Oh my God, I was starstruck. I was completely starstruck when we found out that he, you know, when his secretary emailed us and said that, you know, he would be up for doing the interview as long as it's in New York and as long as it's near his office. I was just like, oh my God, yeah, of course. And then, yeah, we did it in a hotel near his office, and he just walked in by himself, like quite small, demure guy, like really lovely, really generous with his time. I was like starstruck because this is David Stern. I think if you're going to kind of like give Nike and give, you know, Brand Jordan, you know, so much credit for their role in sort of like changing the face of athlete and endorsement deals, then a lot of credit has to go to David Stern, because he revolutionized the NBA and gave those brands and these athletes a platform to do that. You know, this all happened on his watch. You know, the globalization, the commercialization of the NBA happened on David Stern's watch. He is responsible, you know, for the NBA being what it is today. You know, I think the longest serving, you know, commissioner of any sports sort of like brand is David Stern. So he was a legend. And, you know, I'd read about this guy. I never thought we were ever going to get him. And yeah, he was just like the nicest guy. I got a picture with him because I, you know, and I never do that, but it was just David Stern, hero. Yeah. So yeah, when I found out about his passing, I was just so devastating in January, you know. It's, you know, but I think that, yeah, I think people just don't understand the impact that he had. He's an incredible marketeer, and he saw where the NBA is today before people even knew. You know, he knew that it was going to get to this place. He knew that it was going to be this spectacle and this fanfare was going to surround it. He knew that in the 80s, you know, and he set about sort of like, you know, putting that plan to action and you know, laying the foundations for all of that.
And whether he meant to or not, I think he also helped supercharge the selling of the Air Jordan 1s, of course, because you banned them
100%.
In the first place.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, 100%.
Cool. Okay, well, Yemi, thanks for talking to me, man.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
And but best of luck with the film. When is it officially out? Is it this week or next week?
So it's it had its sort of like virtual sort of like premiere at London Film Festival on the 13th, and then after that there's a few preview screenings in cinemas on the 16th, the 20th, the 23rd, and the 24th. And I think it gets released shortly after that.
And I noticed there was a BBC Films sort of production link on it. Is it going to be on BBC at some point?
Yeah, it's going to be on the BBC, I think, in November.
Excellent. Well, our listeners can look forward to that then. Thanks awesome. For your time, Yemi. Best of luck with
pleasure. It. Thank you for having me. Thank you.